Hello everyone, and welcome to another oneliner.com podcast. I, as always, am Craig Eastman, and in Glasgow, Scott Morris.
Hello.
And in Falkirk, Drew Tavendale.
Hello.
We've got four films to look at this week, so without further ado, let us crack on. Repo Men then, Scott.
Repo Men pretty much came out of nowhere for me, a few posters notwithstanding. The general concept is not too disheartening. Transplant technology in the slightly distant future has evolved beyond troublesome meat-based organs, with shiny metallic hearts and such allowing people to extend their lives and, in some cases, capabilities beyond what we can do these days. This comes at a price, and an exorbitant one at that. However, there's plenty of reasonably financed installment plans, and it's only in the unlikely event of you failing to make payment that the company has to call on a repo man like Raimi, played by Jude Law. The repo men do in the future what they do in the present, except now they need scalpels rather than lockpicks. Fail to pay for your liver, they cut you up and take it back. The top two working for their boss Frank, played by Liev Schreiber, are Raimi and his childhood mate Jake, Forrest Whitaker. They've been through a lot together and have the bonds and scars to prove it. Their relationship becomes strained, along with Raimi's family life, when an accident leaves Raimi needing a shiny new heart, which he's struggling to pay for. Presumably you can see where this is heading. Winding up on the run with Beth, played by Alice Braga, the film soon dispenses with its attempts at social, economic, moral and political commentary, and becomes a full-on action-slash-chase film. And perhaps surprisingly for a first-time director, it's handled very well. There's some slick action set pieces, and if you watch it in a double bill with Kick-Ass, you may just have the most violent double feature to hit multiplexes since, well, the days of the Grindhouse rather than the multiplex. I normally find Law to be an unlikable, prickly character in most of his roles, which sometimes plays to advantage, but I've never found him particularly likeable when he's supposed to be. This is the first time I have. He shows good camaraderie with Whitaker, and he's genuinely likeable here, even when doing an inherently distasteful job. Schreiber plays an excellent arsehole, and his all-round sleaziness makes his final reel payoff all the more enjoyable. The setting and design is laudable. It occasionally seems like a version of Blade Runner with amateur surgery, which is no bad thing, and it turns out to be quite enjoyable. It's a solid concept, and its siege into a brainless and satisfying blood-drenched action film is handled better than most films I've seen that attempt the same thing. On balance, it's not bad at all.
Drew, Repo Men.
The biggest revelation for me, similar to Scott, was Jude Law, who normally I find unlikable, whose presence in the film is a bad thing. And again, yes, he's quite unlikable, but the few roles I've really liked him in, for instance Gattaca and his hitman in Road to Perdition, he's meant to be unlikable. But in this, strangely, from the get-go, actually liked him and his character and was quite enjoying watching him, which is the strangest of things because, well, Jude Law's a bit shit generally. In this though, it's just a fun film. It's quite ridiculously gory and violent, but I find that quite entertaining. I don't have a lot to add to what Scott says. It's just, it's fun. It's got a twist ending that actually for probably once ever I liked and thought made some sort of sense within the premise of the film. It's fun, it's daft, it's ridiculously unbelievable, but it's very entertaining, and I wouldn't let other people's negative reviews put you off. It's a blast.
A blast. Blast-tastic.
Oh, one other thing I would just say, that not the main poster, but the secondary posters have been around for this. I'd just give extra kudos to the film for that, simply for having some of the only interesting film posters have been in years. Almost every film poster boils down to now there's a couple of people from the film standing next to each other or back-to-back and the name of the film. And some of the secondary posters of this film are actually interesting and different. Doesn't make any difference to the content, naturally, but it's just nice that they've actually put a little bit of effort into it as opposed to making an identikit film poster compared to it's almost identical to anything else in the round just
That's
now.
Pretty good of them.
Says the voice of a man yet to be convinced.
So if you're a fan of posters, check it out. Ricky Gervais and Steve Merchant have teamed up on numerous occasions for numerous projects, but Cemetery Junction marks the first time that the writing pair have also directed a film together. Drew, is it the monumental exercise in comedic genius that one would hope for?
No.
Boo.
It is, however, a fairly solidly enjoyable film. It's a fairly typical coming-of-age tale. A few friends, who one of whom, particularly Freddy, feels like he's outgrowing what he considers his small-town existence, wants to, he knows his friends are a bit juvenile, wants to improve himself, perhaps move out at some point of the town. That's all fairly standard stuff. There's not really an awful lot more to say about the story. You've seen it several, probably thousand times before. It's fairly competently handled. The characters are reasonably believably drawn apart from, while it's funny, the comic sidekick who appears to just be a buffoon who's there to be laughed at, and that's a bit tiresome really. The real success of the film though comes from really what you might consider very, very minor bits. It's almost disappointing that the rest of the film isn't quite as successful as these. There are just small scenes, even sometimes it's as much as 3 or 4 seconds of the expression of somebody's face that are very, very affecting. An old man retiring at a very, very awkward and unenjoyable works night out. It's subtle stuff that the writing team seem to have pulled off particularly well. Another very touching scene where one of the main characters learns to get on better with his dad and understands why his dad did what he did in the past. And I'm derailing here. Good bits and bad bits.
Scott, were there more good bits than bad bits?
I would have to say there's probably no bad bits in this. There's good bits and solid, ordinary bits. The story's solid enough. There's probably more nuance and detail than you'd normally expect in this kind of thing. The acting's uniformly decent, and I've no major complaints with the bulk of the film. It's perhaps a trifle slowly paced in the first few reels, but I can't think what you'd want to take out to try and speed it up. It does reek of nostalgia. I suppose I ought to expect the 70s to look like the 70s, but this film looks more like the 70s than I suspect the 70s themselves did. The frustration does come from the moments that are pretty spectacular. There's only a few moments of absolute brilliance, subtle looks and the offhand character touches that elevate it to brilliant status. There's only flashes of brilliance, but it's better to have flashes of brilliance than none at all.
Absolutely, yes.
I think we can all agree with that.
I mean, it looks quite nice. The cinematography is quite pleasant, although it does seem like the whole thing takes place in one very, very pleasant, incredibly long summer for the most part. There are a couple of things I'd like to remove from it. The other things I've done particularly well is stuff that Ricky Gervais has pulled off in The Office and Extras is of making awkward situations very, very believable. In this case, it's really awkward work to do's when nobody really wants to cut loose because the boss is there, that sort of thing. There's a almost obligatory cameo from Stephen Merchant, at which point the entire film grinds to halt because Stephen Merchant looks like a big Stephen Merchant looking goon. In this case, he turns up looking like a goon with a silly moustache, and it's pointless and just it feels unconnected to the rest of the film. And Ricky Gervais himself plays a small role, and he's not bad in it. It's just that, unlike, say, in Ghost Town, when he definitely felt like a character, this, he turns up and he feels like Ricky Gervais, and it kind of takes you out of the film for a bit, but those are small and infrequent points, so it wouldn't let you put it off. It's just something to bear in mind.
Thanks. Whippet is the name, and Roller Derby is the game. Scott, what say ye about Drew Barrymore's directorial debut?
Well, I just assumed that I wouldn't like Whippet, which is alright, because it's plainly not aimed at me, and there's not much reason, apart from, say, a film podcast, that I'd actually watch it. But seeing as I am doing a film podcast, watch it I did. Surprisingly, like it, I also did. That said, the basic structure of it isn't anything massively special. A misfit teenager is railroaded by parents into a life she doesn't want, finds an escape in an outside activity her parents would disapprove of, she makes new friends, grows as a person, so on and so forth. The main difference in this film is the outside activity. Roller derby? Who the hell makes a film about roller derby? Come and think of it, what is it? Whether it's an age thing or a not being American thing, I can't say I've had any more exposure to it than the version you get in the original Rollerball. At any rate, the quirky activity provides a useful hook from which to explain the film's quirky characters that somehow feel more organic than, say, Juno. Aside from the teen rebellion angle, there's also a hint of the sporting underdog story mixed in as Bliss's team, the Hurl Scouts, decide to change from being happy to play and lose to wanting to play to win. It all works pretty seamlessly. Ellen Page, Juno herself, being a likeable lead character. She's got a faintly ridiculous supporting cast as well in really ridiculous roles. Drew Barrymore, Marcia Gay Harden, Kristen Wiig, Juliette Lewis, Jimmy Fallon, Andrew Wilson's grizzled world-weary coach, and bizarrely a cameo from Harmar Superstar, all do exactly what they need to do to make it an enjoyable and breezy watch. Double credits must go to Drew Barrymore, doing a good job as the director. The film has a decent emotional heart, likeable characters, a unique setting, and it's enough to make it an enjoyable film. If you want to be negative about it, it doesn't stray much from its genre roots at all. You could argue all the quirks in the world are just to distract you from its ordinary providence, but that's just being willfully miserable. It's a light, breezy, and enjoyable piece of work, even for miserable gits like me who aren't in the target audience for this in any way, shape, or form.
The first problem I had with it, I just want to get it out of the way, is I cannot get excited or bring myself to care about roller derby. I find it dull and uninteresting. Something not helped by the, admittedly I suspect, more realistic and unvarnished than typical for Hollywood film, sporting action sequences, which just left me cold. I can imagine it'd be fun to play, but as a spectator, it really isn't doing anything for me. Secondly, a problem that had me sort of feeling uncomfortable from the beginning is the film feels out of time, and early in the film the tone, the clothes, the look, the atmosphere, the houses, the music, the sport all make it feel like it's set in the 70s, and only when you see the occasional glimpse of a cell phone or a modern looking car does that feeling break. As a result, the film feels somewhat uncomfortable, maybe the word. It's possible that's deliberate. Apparently roller derby was initially popular in the 70s and has seen a resurgence in Texas of late. And I did wonder if Barrymore was perhaps trying to evoke a sense of nostalgia. If she is, though, then it's failed, as the film just doesn't feel quite right in time. And I couldn't say it's a bad film. It's certainly reasonably enjoyable. It's an enjoyable enough story. The characters are quite believable. They typically act like sensible, nuanced, rational human beings, rather than the one-dimensional, unreasonable movie characters you might expect in this sort of thing. Unfortunately though, Barrymore's direction has elicited some very low-key performances from the cast, but they're not bad, not by any means. It's just they feel probably more real than we would often see in a film, but they're not that compelling because of it. But that may just be personal preference rather than anything necessarily bad with the film. Perhaps other people may appreciate the lower key performances more than I do. It's enjoyable enough. Again, I'm not the target audience. It's worth a watch. I wouldn't rush out to see it, but definitely worth a watch. Not one to avoid, certainly.
And
that seemed really cohesive when I wrote it earlier.
I'd recommend it. I wouldn't avoid it. Sorry, man. I don't mean to be, I'm not taking the mick or anything. It just that appealed to me.
Of course you're not.
And finally, then, for tonight's podcast, a film about which I have no concept, no inkling of a beginning of the faintest clue. Extract. Someone tell me about that. Drew, you tell me about it.
This might be considered something of a spiritual successor to Mike Judge's Office Space. It's ostensibly about Jason Bateman's plant owner and his troubles with his life. He's got employee troubles and a company wants to buy him over. His wife isn't sleeping with him anymore. He's got an annoying neighbour. The problem is that it's really crying out for a point, perhaps a statement or commentary on, workplace relations, societal ennui, something. That and a plot to give it a bit of drive. Not that it's a bad film, not by any means. There are decent helpings of funny, if not hilarious, sequences, and a good smattering of moments that, if they don't elicit laughs, will at least raise a smile. And it's definitely helped by having the pretty much endlessly watchable J.K. Simmons and dependable Jason Bateman in it. The problem with it, though, is, well, it's like 90 minutes long, and if you like J.K. Simmons and Jason Bateman, you're going to find it enjoyable enough. But it just kind of meanders along with nothing much to say, and then it ends. Actually, what it feels like, I guess, is a sketch show with recurring characters. There are the gossipy and incompetent production line women, and the boss, played by J.K. Simmons, who can't or won't remember any of his employees' names, and the irritating neighbour. It's worth a watch. Don't expect it to be as good or as memorable as Judge's seminal earlier work, Office Space. It's entertaining enough, but I wouldn't rush out to see this either. But you may get something out of it. This is all.
Yeah, Extract's not too far off the usual midlife crisis movie. Still, his descent from stable but bored everyman into the increasingly deranged and back again is familiar enough character art. Extract's perfectly entertaining without ever crossing the line into something riotously brilliant. It's aiming itself more as a continual series of gentle laughs rather than setting up for major pratfalls, and it's helped in this by a solid, likeable, believable turn from Jason Bateman and Kirsten Wiig as his wife. Also a great performance from J.K. Simmons and Ben Affleck, who are very funny in supporting roles. But if there is a problem with it, it's the shift in tone between the lead roles and the supporting ones. The smaller roles seem to be filled entirely with really broad, crass stereotypes. They don't feel like they belong in the same film. None of them are particularly reprehensible in and of themselves, but in the context of the film, they seem jarringly out of place and at odds with the more realistic concerns and dramas of the leads. That said, it's not like it detracts greatly from the body of the piece, which remains amusing enough to be worth a watch, if not stupendous enough to recommend you beat down the doors to get to it.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the sort of thing that made it feel like a sketch show. Was you got the sort of the broad character and it comes back and does more or less the same thing two or three times. But if that were a sketch show TV series, you'd expect that recurring character to come back. You're like, oh, I know what to expect here, and I'll still have a wee chuckle at it. It's the sort of thing, I mean, you'll spend almost all the running time with a smile on your face, and that can never be a bad thing.
No, it can't. And that's a powerful message to end this podcast on. You can't smile too much. You can't. You really can't. We mean that. Yeah, keep it real. Thanks for listening and all that. Apologies for my lack of input. For what it's worth, I've been Craig. And as always, Scott was Scott.
Goodbye.
And Drew was, as always, the inimitable Drew.
A boiled goose for everyone.
Cooked goose.
Is it? Yeah. Cooked. Fair enough. Boiling's a type of cooking.
And he's got me there. And he's got me there.
A cooked goose for everyone.
Or boiled if you prefer. Yeah, bye everyone. I'm overtired.
Release a Kraken in aisle 4.